Now you will be listening to a program about a specific illness. And this is because you are starting your journey with this condition together with your parents or guardians. If that's not the case, then you're just interested in this and want to know more about it. In this program, you will be listening to a child or a young person telling us about their specific illness, talking about everything they went through since the first day they were diagnosed up until where they are now. You will also listen to the caregiver talking about the experience and the doctor that was treating the child. So sit back, relax and listen to what they have to tell us.
Hello, my name is Sakim Bardens. I'm 18 years old and I'm currently completing my GED. Today I'll be sharing my journey of living with hemophilia and I'll be joined by my little brother Siraj, who is also living with hemophilia.
Hi, my name is Siraj. I'm 8 years old.
Join us as we talk about our hemophilia journey. I was diagnosed with hemophilia since infancy, around 2 years old, and it's a lifelong condition. I was bruising and my parents took me to hospital, but it took me a while to be diagnosed. However, eventually, once they did a biopsy, the last biopsy, they took a small specimen of my blood, and once they checked it out, they diagnosed me with hemophilia. Compared to a normal person, if they were to bruise or injure themselves, the body heals by itself and the healing process would be different to the average hemophiliac. It's different in the sense where if we were to bruise ourselves, we would bleed for a much longer period and bruising could get out of hand and sometimes even fatal.
How I got sick is my sister, she was playing Uno with me and then she didn't want to play with me. And then I ran to the toilet, then go vomit, and then they pat on my back, then I vomited again and then I got sick. Then I went into bed, then I got much better. And my condition is I'm hemophilia. And when I get to bruise like this, and like this, they need to go fetch some factor. That means, like when I get bruises and then they prick me in my arm here, my vein, and then the blood comes out and I don't cry when they prick me.
Hi, I'm Abdul, and parent to Hakim and Siraj Barnes. So when Hakim was diagnosed, he was 6 months old. So we were still new at this parenting kind of thing. So it wasn't like Hakim was now, for years he had a normal condition and then all of a sudden something came along and it disrupted and then immediately we had to find now a new way of parenting or anything. It was almost like he was, because he was 6 months old and We just adjusted to having a baby in our life and this thing happened and then it was just something that we had to just adjust to again. And with Hakim, it was a learning experience. But when Siraj came along, Siraj wasn't even out of the womb yet and we already realized that he might have the same condition. So as soon as he was out of the womb and then he was tested and then we got the phone call that, look, he's got the very same severe hemophilia condition as his brother. So this I can truly say, when I got the call that he's got the same condition, I wasn't even negatively affected or depressed about it or saying, man, you're another one and nothing like that. It's truly just something I just accepted.
Hi, my name is Samir Rahim. I'm the physiotherapist here at Red Cross War Memorial Children's Hospital and I work with children who have hemophilia. So I've been working at Red Cross War Memorial Children's Hospital for the last 15 years, and I'm currently the head of department, and I work with a staff of 8 physiotherapists, covering all in- and outpatient areas. So hemophilia is a clotting disorder that is generally inherited by boys, which prevents them from stopping bleeding when they get injuries, either a cut or injuries, internal injuries such as joint injuries or muscle injuries, which people without hemophilia can manage without even noticing. It's inherited through the family, so the mom gives it to the son, and there's different severities which can manifest with the hemophilia. So common symptoms are joint injuries, joint bleeds, where the child will complain of a swollen or very painful joint. The joint is very warm. There's also bruising, and the child will often present to the hospital with lots of bruises on their skin, unexplained, so from bumping or knocking onto furniture or falling onto the floor, and also muscle injuries. Other injuries or symptoms that can be seen are things like nosebleeds or excessive bleeding from a small cut. One of the earliest symptoms also is children having circumcisions, and doctors struggle to stop the bleeding because they don't know the child has hemophilia.
That's the end of part one of a three-part series. We still have two parts left, so get up, stretch a bit, and go fetch you a cup of warm coffee. And when you're back, you can press play. Welcome back. We will continue with this program. Here is part two.
So, all hemophiliacs like to think that they can live a normal life as any other person. With my lifestyle, I have free access to factors since I can do it by myself. And that obviously enables me to do more than most people can, because I don't have to fear that I have to get to the hospital after I have a bleed that it's going to stay for a while, because most people don't even have access to transport. They would sit with the bleed for days. And luckily, my mom taught me how to do the factor, and the healthcare workers said that since I'm doing it at home, they will give me the factor for free. So this obviously helps me do almost everything that everyone else does, as long as I am protected. So the factor levels are low. Once I take factor, my factor levels rise. So that usually covers me from whatever, let's say I play soccer and I get an injury. The taking factor prior to the activity prevents it from turning into a bleed.
I need to take factor like 6 boxes for like 5 days, and I might get a bruise just in case if I knock my toe and then it gets bruised, and then if I play soccer then a boy kicked me by mistake and then I could take factor, it would swell up, yeah, and then it'll go away.
The administering of the factor 8, that involves like a blood transfusion. It involves injecting, it involves needles, and the preparation for the factor. You have to mix it and all of that. So everybody is involved. Everybody. I'm talking about the whole family, his sisters and brother Hakim, obviously. So everybody's involved. And myself personally, I can't take needles. But because there's always somebody else around, so they know how to do it. And I've got a lot of other things to take care of. And that's only when push comes to shove, then I will do it. But for now, everybody's involved, and they do it with pleasure.
Factor is one of the many proteins in the blood which is required to help the body stop bleeding. A person with hemophilia is lacking one of these factors. The current treatment for people with hemophilia is to replace the protein by giving them an injection. This can be done either at the time at which they injure themselves, or it can be done on a regular basis, either once a week, twice a week, or 3 times a week. This allows us to push the factor concentration level up to a point where bleeding is less likely. So the most common hemophilia is hemophilia A, where clotting factor number 8 is missing from the blood or is in a decreased level in the blood, and the second most common is hemophilia B, which is clotting factor 9. You get severe hemophilia, which is less than 1% of factor in your blood. Moderate hemophilia is 1 to 5% of factor in your blood, and mild hemophilia is 5 to 50% factor in your blood. The severity determines how susceptible you are to injuries or at any time, and there is a higher risk of problems later on, such as joint damage or muscle injuries, the more severe the hemophilia is. The severity depends on the level of factor, the concentration of factor within your own bloodstream. So I met Hakim 15 years ago when I started working here. He was one of my first patients that I was introduced to with hemophilia. So I've walked the journey with him, going through his life process, going through how he's developed from a young man to a young adult now. So he's got hemophilia A, and he's got severe hemophilia A, and he's had multiple joint bleeds and injuries over the course of his life thus far. He is what we call an on-demand therapy. So when he had a bleed was the only time when he would get his medication. And luckily, he was able to get his medication at home. So his parents were able to give him his medication, which is actually done via a drip, so an injection. And as he got older, he was able to then give himself his injection. When it was severe injuries and wasn't being managed adequately, wasn't getting better soon enough, he would then need to come into hospital, and then the medical team would also evaluate and manage him. He's got some joint damage that has been there because of the difficulties with providing medication for hemophilia. So he's got an elbow that is stiff and is unable to use it fully. He's also got some knee and ankle problems, which essentially is an early arthritis where the joints are stiff and painful and can limit your function. Siraj Ahmed is much younger, and I think he's been lucky that Hakim has also gone through the process, and Hakim was supportive of Siraj. He helped him get his factor and his medication. And fortunately, Siraj doesn't have any joint problems at the moment. He has more nosebleeds, and that's also some of the things that can happen within hemophilia. You could have exactly the same type of hemophilia, but the way your hemophilia affects you can be completely different.
Initially, when I had hemophilia, I was the only one in my family with hemophilia, and that obviously made me feel alone. I was under the impression, like, why does this have to happen to me? It's unfair. And when Siraj came along, I realized that my suffering wasn't that great compared to other conditions, and the way I dealt with it, so from the wards that I've seen, in the hematology wards, there's cancer patients as well. So I basically learned that I am much better off than them, but I still felt that solitude. And when Siraj came along, he really made me feel like I'm not in this alone. And he wouldn't feel as I had felt when I was alone, because he has an older brother who also has hemophilia and who understands hemophilia.
I suppose Hakim, he was one hemophilia boy, and then he said that I came along and that made him feel like he wasn't the only hemophilia in the family.
I have received a lot of guidance and support from the Hemophilia Foundation. They put together camps and programs which helps hemophiliacs understand the conditions and even mentors them into gaining leadership skills and working together as one, which we should do since we all suffer from the same condition.
My name is Bradley Rayner. I'm the chairperson to the South African Hemophilia Foundation. I'm also a sufferer of hemophilia severe. The South African Hemophilia Foundation is a volunteer organization. We try and promote the healthcare and service delivery to our community that have bleeding conditions. The relationship that the foundation has with people who have the bleeding condition is essentially a lifetime relationship where we support and ensure that any barriers to receiving care is overcome. Since it is an inherited condition, the children are born with it and they grow up into adulthood. We provide support services, you know, throughout the lifetime.
Because of the Hemophiliac Foundation, when Siraj came along, they put us into contact with so many people who can out there looking out for when he comes into the world. Like, they gave us all the information. In fact, they were even there with the birth, and which they didn't have to be because it's a normal birth. It's just that they just wanted to be on standby, in other words, support.
You just listened to part two. But there's still one more part to go, so take another break, and when you come back, you can listen to the final part.
My physiotherapist, Samir, has served as a counselor in a way for me ever since I had hemophilia and I started to understand hemophilia. There were many times when I felt it was unfair and I blamed everyone else for my condition because I was just thinking, why? I have such a strong passion for soccer, yet I'm the one to suffer with this condition. And Samiru talked to me many times because he could understand where I'm coming from, as he knows he deals with hemophilia on a daily basis as a physiotherapist. So he knows all the complications that I'm going through and my tremendous passion for soccer and what it's like not to be able to live that dream. And he spoke to me on many occasions, on camps, and he helped me through, he made me understand why it's not possible. And he even tried finding loopholes. So even though he knew that it could cause injury, because I really wanted to play for a soccer club once upon a time, and even though he knew it could cause injury, he still advised me, take some factor before you're going to play a game, or training, or anything, and you should be okay. Because he knew that one day I would discover on my own that I cannot play soccer, and I just have to deal with that.
Physically, the benefits of being involved in a sport is there. You get better muscles, your joints are stronger, your bones are stronger, you're involved in a social event where you can participate with your peers, and so you build up that type of friendship and involvement with friends, the competitiveness and all those things that go with playing with friends. The downside is that certain sports can result in more frequent injuries. For example, soccer. We know that even the professional soccer players, they injure themselves from time to time. The challenge is that with hemophilia, that any small injury can result in a major medical problem, which can not necessarily bother you now, but can cause problems later on when the person is older. And so we often advise not to participate too competitively in especially contact sports, and to discuss it openly with us when they come to the clinic so that we can advise and go through the dangers and benefits of different sports. And we can assist in identifying other options of being involved in sports or other sports to participate in. And the physiotherapist can also advise into what type of exercises to do to strengthen certain muscle groups to help prevent certain injuries that are common in specific sports.
My dad takes care of me. When I play with his kids outside, they would be too rough for me. My dad's scared that they play too rough and they will bully me.
He just enjoys himself with playing with other kids. He loves that. And some of them, they play rough. The other kids, they don't understand. I mean, they're kids. And even if they did understand his condition, they're not going to not play rough. They play naturally. Unfortunately, I have to take that away from him. So obviously, I have to find substitutes for that. He has to play. So we think of other things. But as far as playing outside with the other kids, we can't allow that.
There's a bracelet for hemophiliacs that they have to wear every day of their life because it speaks for them when they cannot. So hemophilia isn't a common condition and most doctors are not educated about it. So if I was in an accident, for instance, and let's say I slipped into a coma, there was no way for me to communicate to the doctor. They wouldn't know that I have hemophilia. And that time spent not sending me to Grotes Giro Red Cross where I can't get my factor would prove to be fatal. So what the bracelet does is it has the information on the back where they know it explains just short briefly what hemophilia is and who to contact and where to take me. Also, if the wrong medication is administered, hemophiliacs are allergic to aspirin, so even a mild headache, if it's treated with aspirin, it thins our blood, and if a bleed occurs, the blood would flow much faster and cause even more damage. There's a lot of stigma that I've experienced as a hemophiliac with especially my age group and my peers at school. So I haven't or I don't wear the bracelet, which I am supposed to do, but because I was treated differently and sometimes even bullied because people saw me different and they saw me as weaker and not equal because of my condition. I stopped wearing the bracelet. And it's not good because, like I said before, it speaks for you when you cannot.
I wear the bracelet for, like, if I'm on the street and I don't know where my home, and then, like, if I have bruises on me, I must just turn the bracelet around, and then they will see where's the Red Cross, and they will send me home.
Hemophilia is a very rare disorder, and not everybody is very well versed in how hemophilia presents. Often a child can present to the trauma unit with lots of bruising and injuries or nosebleeds, and the medical team that's managing the patient won't think of hemophilia. They will think of other causes of bruising, of nosebleeds, and not be able to pinpoint what the cause of the problem is. So it's important that people start thinking about other causes of injuries and bruises when a patient comes to an emergency center. In some centers where people also aren't sure of what hemophilia is, they might misdiagnose them with the wrong type of hemophilia and give the wrong medication. And so the medication, so if you're a factor 8 hemophilia and the doctor gives you a factor 9 factor, it's not going to help your bleeding. So no matter how much of that factor you're getting, you're not going to improve. And that's also, I think, important where once you're diagnosed, you wear your medical alert bracelets. The medical alert bracelet will identify exactly what type of hemophilia you are, the percentage of factor in your blood, and also the medication you need to treat that hemophilia. So whenever you arrive at an emergency center or at a hospital where people aren't sure what hemophilia is, that medical alert bracelet will speak for you. It will give exactly what needs to be done for you when you have a bleed. And so that also decreases the chances of misdiagnosis at other places, which are not necessarily your hemophilia treatment center.
To a child that has hemophilia like me, I would give them advice like this. They must never do dangerous stuff, and they must never swim deep in the water and at the beach, and they must never climb on trees. And big factor.
My advice to people with hemophilia and their families is to take it day by day. It is going to be a long process to go through and to manage the problems as they arise, to discuss it with us so that we can help support through those problems. And if they have any concerns, to raise it with us. We are open to listening to them, to help adjust medication, to help support them when it comes to the management of hemophilia. And at the end of the day, we want to maintain and improve quality of life for the person with hemophilia and for the family. And whatever we can do to do that, we are open to listening to ideas.
For a person who just discovered that they have hemophilia for the first time, the advice that I would give to them is it will be hard. And the only time it will get any easier is once you accept the condition and take your medication whenever you have to. And also consult with the relevant people who only want to help you.
My advice, especially when it comes to hemophilia, to any parent is, first of all, the foundation. That is critical. Apart from the foundation, which, as I said, you know, is the most important thing, I think that the other piece of little advice that I want to give is that once your child has been diagnosed with this condition, is not to be alarmed in the sense that he's not going to be able to do this or that. He can do anything. He can do everything. It's just the way you handle it. It's just like the way you handle life. You can do things differently. And it is definitely a case of there's no manual that says because he's hemophiliac and things should be done this way or that way. It's just like there's no manual to life. It's just how you live with your child. And if you, obviously you care about your child, so if you are overcautious, it's a bad thing. If you care very little, it's a bad thing. So it's a balance. And the way you love your child, I think, that is the driving factor. You just act upon that and then your child grows up. That's it.
With World Hemophilia Day being the 17th of April, we're now in the month of April. And this theme this year is Reach Out, the First Step to Care, which basically means that don't sit quietly, but get involved in your own management, whether it's through awareness activities or whether it's through participating at the Hemophilia Treatment Center to ensure that people are aware of what is a condition that is not known by many people.
Thank you for taking your time out to listen to this program. This was put together by RX Radio, a radio station by and for children, situated at the Red Cross War Memorial Children's Hospital. Please visit our website www.rxradio.co.za for more amazing programming. Enjoy the rest of your day.